During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale. Right.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the chef owner of Belly of the Beast, a restaurant in Spring, Texas, and also the reigning James Beard Award winner for Best Chef Texas. Making his triumphant return to the podcast after 5 years, Thomas Billy, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing well.
It's a big buildup.
Yeah.
Big buildup. You've been a busy guy.
Yes, sir.
I want to talk about the Beard Award, and I want to talk about some of your more recent accomplishments, but I want to go back first. I want to kind of go chronologically.
Okay.
Because the last time you were on the show, you had the original location of Belly and the Beast, which was this very casual kind of modern taqueria in Old Town Spring.
Right.
And you were getting some traction and you were getting a little bit of critical attention, but you decided to kind of walk away from that. So talk to me about kind of where you were in 2021 when you decided, like, this isn't what I want.
Well, yeah. So, you know, in 2021, when we decided to push pause on Belly of the Beast, let me take you back to the beginning. So the original concept of Belly of the Beast before the pandemic was always going to kind of be like what we're doing right now. I wanted a very chef-driven, like, seasonal menu that I change very often. You know, we were only like 24 seats at the time. So I originally was thinking almost like tasting menu style, like, you know, just given like how small the space was, right? And then 5 weeks into it, we got hit with the pandemic, right? So, you know, there's just like, nobody knows how to navigate that, right? Like, nobody's been in a global pandemic, like, running a business and, you know, just kind of like figuring it out. It was my first time as a restaurant owner. And, you know, at the time, I was pretty much handling the day-to-day by myself, you know. You know, so when we pivoted, we said, okay, you know, let's be more casual and a little more approachable, and something I can't change the menu often, so we became a taqueria, you know. And you know, we did well, obviously. You know, we garnered your attention and other people's attention. And you know, when the lease was coming up, though, you know, obviously, like, you know, to paint a picture, though, the space one was very small, like, infrastructure wise, right? I didn't have an AC in the kitchen. Not like, you know, it was insane. Yeah. It was
not ideal.
Yeah. It was tiny. So I had like a portable AC that would drop down the temperature, maybe about 5 degrees, you know, just enough to not like collapse on the line. And then, and every time it would rain, we lose power or the internet, and the backyard would flood, and just like the infrastructure just wasn't like, you know, it wasn't good, right? So, like, when, you know, I started weighing out all those, like, negatives, right? Like, one, like, you know, obviously being super overworked and beat down and trodden, you know, it's like, okay, you know, go to landlord, and he's like, okay, you know, your lease is up, and, you know, I'm raising the price about 35% more, you know, so it's just like, whoa. I said, okay, that's not a problem, you know, but can you fix these problems? Like, you know, I was promised an AC in the kitchen and all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. He was like, no. So I was like, well, that doesn't help, you know. And obviously we're doing really well and stuff like that. So, but, you know, I think more anything, my physical and mental health was a lot more important at the time. And, or anytime, but you know, but it was a lot more factors than that, right? It was like the infrastructure. I kind of immediately wanted to look for a space anyways, just to transition to, but there was nothing available at the time. So, you know, later that month, I was approached, you know, with the Chivo conversation and stuff like that. So I just kind of felt like, okay, this is a, you know, this is maybe a godsend, you know, I'm able to like shut this down and kind of just transition. And that way I'm not like out of the kitchen and out of a job. So, you know, but that was, you know, the Chivo situation was also a 1 year commitment because I didn't want to like close Belly of the Beast. That's why I always said I push pause, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think Chivo's was an interesting opportunity for you because it brought you inside the loop and kind of exposed you to a new group of diners. And it also allowed you to do some of that more elevated, more chef driven kind of food that you couldn't do at the original Belly of the Beast. So, you know, just talk a little bit about kind of what you took from that experience and kind of how it helped prepare you to reopen Belly of the Beast down the road.
So, you know, reopening a location that was already existing, renaming it and stuff like that. That helped with like the opening of this, right? Like just kind of understanding like what works, what doesn't work. You know, I wasn't even at that place. I wasn't really able to go balls to the walls and do kind of like what I really wanted to, because obviously there's people handling the purse and stuff like that. So, you know, you know, and it's at the end of the day, it's a business, right? So, you know, I did what I could do to make sure that, you know, one, my brand gets noticed, right? Like my style of cooking and stuff like that. But I didn't really make a lot of those dishes like how this version of Belly of the Beast is, which is very personal to me, like food from my upbringing and my like travels and like my career and stuff like that. I made more Mexican forward dishes, I would want to say, at Chivo's and stuff like that. You know, obviously there was stuff like the pozole dumplings that were like, you know, the playful side of me and stuff like that, that obviously I'm like kind of known for and stuff like that. So, you know, certain dishes, yeah, got my personal touch, but a lot of the other dishes were like kind of very Mexican. Like, how can we like do a version of Al Pastor? How can we do a version of this? You know, just kind of like that kind of thinking and stuff like that. But I feel like it prepared me for a bigger market, you know, and to understand like the layout of the city and what diners actually like. And then I got to meet more vendors. So it was a great stepping stone.
All right. So let's fast forward to the fall of 2023. You make the decision to step away from Chivo's and to revive Belly of the Beast. Did you think about like trying to find something in the loop, or were you always focused on spread?
No, actually, you know, all my pop-ups were in the city, and they were in the city for a reason. You know, we were looking to be in the city. As I did all those pop-ups, though, 60% of the audience, of the target that would come in, were people from Spring, you know, or like the Woodlands or whatnot. And I was like, well, this is pretty crazy. You know, these people are driving all the way into the city, you know, they miss us. But you know, we got shot down at a lot of spaces in the city. You know, we put a lot of bids in and we just weren't able to capture a contract out there. You know, we looked at some pretty cool spaces, like some in Midtown, some in the Heights area, some by like Washington. You know, it was like four places that we put bid in and we got shot down. You know, and then as we saw, as we were exploring the other pop-ups and stuff like that, I was like, well, you know, let's try closer to home. And, you know, we got shot down there a bunch of times too. And finally, like the space that we're in, it opened up. Like late night, I was like, oh, this is a new ad. And when I put it out there, the guy was like, hey, come by and see it. So, you know, kind of take a look at it, look at the bones, and just kind of ran with it.
Yeah, I mean, for inner loopers, there's a certain amount of like, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
You get off on, it's 2920, right? You just, you make that left from the highway as you're coming up 45 and you're just driving, like, you don't know where you're going, you know? And then you get to the strip center and you get in the room and you're like, all right, well, you know, here we are now, like, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, we're outside the city.
So talk about this newer vision of Belly of the Beast or 2.0, I guess. Cause you didn't have to be that casual taqueria and you were sort of committed to like a, you know, at least in the beginning, like dinner only. And
right.
I mean, you still have the birria tacos, but that's really that and the ceviches are about all that remains of that original Belly of the Beast. So just talk a little bit about kind of your vision for the restaurant and kind of how it came to fruition.
So, you know, I've always wanted like a small intimate restaurant, and seasonal menu. So, you know, those are like the first and foremost things, like, you know, playing with the seasons, making sure food's in season, stuff like that, being able to change the menu very often. You know, that also helps, you know, but like I wanted to be able to utilize what I've learned throughout my career, which is like, you know, one day, like the next 3.0 version, you know, God willing, will be like live fire and stuff like that, because I really miss cooking with live fire and stuff like that, which is something I did at Odeon for a long time, right? Like we had a wood fire oven, wood fire hearth, all that stuff. So like, you know, hopefully the next iteration will have that upgrade and stuff like that. But throughout my career, you know, I've you know, learned how to make pasta, to break down all this, like fish, like, you know, work with proteins very differently and stuff like that. So I want to be able to utilize my skills in that manner. So that's why, you know, this iteration is I've never wanted to like fully commit to just a Mexican restaurant. I feel like when you go like that one style, for me personally, it's a little difficult. You know what I mean? You got to kind of like put yourself in that box and think in only that box, you know? And I like when I eat, I like to eat like very diverse array of dishes when I go out to eat, right? I don't, you know, so, and I like to cook that way. So, you know, there's obviously some very Mexican forward dishes, and there's like, then there's, you know, you got your Asian flavors and you got some Mediterranean flavors and stuff like that. And there's like French technique and stuff. So I just wanted to be able to like kind of put that all in, you know?
Right. And, you know, as a restaurateur or, you know, in terms of interacting with customers, you don't have to argue with about, oh, it's not authentic. It's not like my grandma makes. It's like, no, your grandma didn't make Malaysian lamb or,
yeah,
you know, Rohan duck or some of the other things that, you know, or pastas, you know, a riff on pasta carbonara with chorizo, right? Like, yeah, no, mm-hmm. we're not having the authenticity conversation because frankly, the conversation is lame and doesn't, like, let's have the is it delicious conversation, right?
Exactly.
Like that's the conversation that we want to have. And I think by that standard, you had a lot to show people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I want to make dishes delicious, you know, but, you know, as far as authenticity is concerned, you know, I feel I target the flavor profile, for example, like the shrimp and pork that I have, right? You eat it and you undeniably are eating a Southeast Asian dish, you know, like a Thai style dish. You know, it may not be something from a Thai restaurant, but, you know, you close your eyes, you're eating it, you're like, man, this tastes very Thai, right? So, and when I think of dishes and stuff like that, I try to stay true to those flavor profiles. But yeah, first and foremost, I want things to taste good, like really good, you know? So that's like in textures and flavors and temperatures and stuff like that. So yeah, absolutely.
I mean, did Spring know what to make of you or did it take you a little bit of time to kind of introduce yourself and get people on board?
So to get back into rhythm here, it took a while, you know, we started off slower than I expected, to be honest with you. Like it was, I opened the menu with like a head on shrimp, squid ink tagliatelle with like very funky, like lemongrass arrabbiata, like a play on bunryu, right? And I think honestly, I of all those dishes, that was like a very like super funky, you know, a lot of fish sauce and stuff like that. I don't think people were ready for that one, you know, but the beauty of like owning a place and seeing these things is like, I'm like, okay, this doesn't work. I'm taking it off. You know, it's like, I'm not going to waste time or energy and especially money on this, you know? So, but yeah, it took a while. I think it wasn't until the first nomination, semifinalist nomination is what actually, I mean, that honestly was probably a saving grace too, because you know we were pretty slow. You know, we weren't doing bad, but we weren't doing well. Obviously, you know what I mean, we were just getting by. You know, and I think that nomination was like, oh, who's this guy? All right, this is in my neighborhood. Cool, let me try it. You know,
yeah, I think there's a lot of like civic pride, especially for people in Spring. You know, you get that James Beard Award semifinalist nomination in the spring of 24. And then in the fall, you get your Bib Gourmand from the Michelin Guide.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of off to the races, because now it's like, you know, I've said this on the show before. I don't know if I've said it to you, but people who don't know what a James Beard Award is or what a Food and Wine Best New Chef is, like they've been exposed to enough media. They know Michelin means a really good restaurant. And yeah. So it just captured people's imagination, certainly in a way that I never anticipated. But talk to me about kind of your experience, like of being included as a Bib Gourmand and then kind of what it did for the restaurant.
So yeah, the Michelin, I think more than anything, it kept us super steady. You know, Michelin is a global entity, you know, so they're all over the world. And you know, when we got that first, when we even got approached by them, we were like, whoa, what's going on here? You know? And, you know, and in my head, I was like, you know, I didn't think I was going to get a star, because we're not doing that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And I've worked and stodged up places that had stars, and I was like, nah, we're definitely not, you know what I mean? But we're a Bib Gourmand. If we're talking about food, definitely a Bib. So, you know, getting it though and receiving it, it changed a lot. You know, I mean, we were able to you know, push the envelope a little further, get higher quality product. You know, like, okay, you know, people are noticing. Let me switch over some proteins to some Texas Wagyu and stuff like that, you know, and be able to kind of just like do some cooler stuff. And that's kept us busy. And, you know, that people come in and they're like, oh, you know, my goal is to eat at all the Michelin Guide restaurants in town. You know, like that's their thing, you know. And we get quite a few people like that. You know, so that carried us. That was a big wave, because, you know, it happened in November. And then we already had like our holiday parties and stuff like that. We're kind of booked up. So our January, which is really bad for a lot of people, was actually really good. You know, like our January was very decent, you know, going into 25. And then, you know, we get the spring semifinalist nod again. And that creates another wave for you. You know what I mean? And then you get a finalist one, and that creates another wave. So, you know, and now it's just like tsunami, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, cause you know, a lot, like there's 20 restaurants that make the semifinalist or, you know, something like that. And so, you know, I mean, they're all excellent, but it can, yeah. You can feel like you're kind of like in a pack, you know, it can be a little hard to distinguish yourself. But then when they say, all right, these are the five best restaurants in Texas, like, yeah, all right, now it's on, you know, because
exactly, like, because what at makes that point, this guy
really
a finalist?
Any of the five places could win, right? So you have to, so like, did you start to think like, holy shit, I could actually win this thing?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a 1 in 5 chance, right? So you know, it's like, you know, 20%. I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but that's 20%. You know, so
it's better than 5%, right? It's better than 1 out of 20.
Exactly. So you know, you're thinking about that, you know, and leading up into it and stuff like that. So, you know, what I did is I just, you know, I put my head down and continue to work like I always do. But I did, do quite a few collaborations and stuff and, you know, casted a wide net to be able to be like, okay, if I'm gonna go out there, you know, I did the stuff with Abbas, I did the stuff with Rose Meyer, you know, and then I had the stuff at my place with all the Houston semifinalists and finalists, you know, just kind of like showcasing that because I thought that was pretty cool too, you know, to be able to do that and just to cook with other people and stuff in house and stuff. You know, obviously everybody was thinking that Manuel was, you know, going third time's the charm situation, you know what I mean? So definitely, you know, I was always thinking I was the underdog. But you never know. You never know what's going to happen till the night of.
Yeah, you never know how those kooky James Beard voters are going to behave.
And you never know who they are either. So it's like, you know, you don't like.
Right, like, right. They don't announce themselves.
Exactly. So you just don't even know, like.
But, you know, you did mention you did that collaboration dinner with some of the other Beard finalists. And there is this kind of interesting movement of, you know, I don't, for lack of a better, like cool modern Mexican restaurants that's kind of happening, right? Yeah. You guys, Totemo, Cochinita, Casa Emma, Martino, you know, you're all kind of like, I just say a little something about being kind of part of that community of this new generation that's kind of elevating or expanding what we think of when it comes to Mexican food in Houston.
Well, I mean, I'm like super proud and like happy to be part of that tapestry, you know, when it comes to the more modern versions of Mexican food. Right. I think a lot of these restaurants that you mentioned, not only are they just kind of like expressing a younger version of like a younger version's idea or a younger version cook's idea of how Mexican food can be, but not only that, but they're also chef owners of their own restaurant, you know, Victoria, you know, Stephanie and Nick, and you know, you got Emmanuel, you know, you got even Evelyn as like a chef owner and
Betty up at
and Betty also, you know, like all these people have a stake in the game and ownership. And you know, when I did plan that dinner, you know, it made me super proud about that, because it's like, hey, look, we are not only investing our talent, but we're showcasing our culture, but we're also funding it ourselves, you know. And I think that's huge, you know what I mean, when you don't have that like big conglomerate behind you or like the PR team. Well, I personally don't. So, you know, I feel like
honestly, none of y'all do. Just off the top of my head, none of y'all work with any of the big PR firms around town.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? So I think that is like beautiful, like, to be like growing so organically, but to be part of that in such a third biggest city in the country, you know, so it's like,
yeah, fourth, but coming for Chicago, always running them down.
Which I'm pretty sure will be surpassing pretty soon. So, you know what I mean? And then I feel like our culinary scene, like in the last 8 years has like blown up as in terms of diversity, but not only that, as in like top tier chefs and just like, you know, like we're a city that has top tier food, you know? So, you know, I personally think the best in the state. So, you know, like I might be a little bit biased, you know, but, you know, anytime somebody wants to argue that, I just mention Agas and then, you know, they can be quiet.
Yeah. You know, one of those restaurants that it's like, all right, Michelin, like your one was cool, but like if you really are paying attention, then.
Yeah,
it's got to be a bib. Like it's got to be a bib this year. It's just one of those places.
You know, I mean, I'm always like, but have you ever eaten at Agas? You know, like you know, and if you haven't, then you don't know what you're missing. You know, but you know, stuff like that. So, but it's like it's great. It's very humbling, but it's very like makes me proud to be part of that. You know,
All right. So take me back. Take me back to that night in June. You're sitting in the theater in Chicago and they say your name. I mean, what was it like? What was the moment like? What was the rest of that night like?
So that moment, you know, so she starts announcing Naisha, and I'm kind of like blacking out, right? Because my palms were sweaty. So I'm just like wiping my hands on my pants, you know, and I'm not like really paying attention because I'm just kind of like breathing hard, just trying to concentrate. So when she says my name, I thought she was starting to say the nominees' names, you know. So, because, you know, I was like, oh, she's going in alphabetical order. She's saying my name first. And Liz turns around. She goes, "You won." And I was like, whoa, what the? You know, so, yeah, so I was like, yeah. So that's why when I got up, like, I was like, man, I don't want to get too emotional. That's why I put my glasses on. I was like, dude, I'm about to, like, start crying over here. You know, so that's why I like my, you know, and then I know Naisha from L.A., so that's why I give her that big old dab and stuff. And you know, that's why the first words were like WTF, you know, like, you know, I was just like, whoa, like I was in shock, you know. And the funny thing is that I wrote an acceptance speech, you know, and I had it in my pocket, but they were only talking points and shorthand. So I would have took a while to just like kind of been like looking and trying to decipher my own writing. So that's why I like literally just started speaking on the top of my head, you know, like I was just like, okay, let's make it short and sweet. But the rest of the night, it was great because I was just, you know, obviously getting phone call after phone call and messages and, you know, all the stuff. And luckily, the night before, I told Liz, I was like, turn off the reservations because we were already transitioning into going to Open Table. And we didn't want to go into, we didn't want the old system to collect more than it had to. Right. So I was like, okay, let's that the week of that we were there was already booked regardless. And then the following week got overbooked, you know, but luckily we shut it down. We were like, okay, we're only keeping these 2 weeks because we need to make the smooth transition into Open Table. And so, we were, yeah, we were elated, man, because we were just like, you know, I went to the after party. I really enjoyed myself. We danced the night away, ate some great food, had some drinks, just kind of like took it all in and actually celebrated. You know, it was very few of us on the dance floor, and I was celebrating, man. It was great.
And then what's it been like at the restaurant? Because, you know, I do think like there is something about Best Chef Texas that really captures people's imagination. And I know I've seen you do a ton of TV ever since. So what's it been like for you?
So, you know, it's been busy, you know, obviously like the media stuff which I'm very new to, like going to Great Day Houston. That was pretty damn cool, you know, and you know, just going on different people's podcasts and having conversations with people and like the news coming and people coming and record. It's just kind of been great. But overall, I think like some of the best thing that's happened is like our guests that come in, they're like super genuinely happy. And I've received more flowers than probably any man has received in his lifetime. You know, like literally, like
literal flowers,
like bouquets and like plants and stuff. And I'm like, man, this is great because I really do enjoy flowers and stuff like that. And I love plants. And so I was like, this is super cool. I feel like it's cool. But like, honestly, like, you know, we get some guests, you know, cause you know, we're a neighborhood restaurant, and they walk in and they're just like, man, we're so happy for you. And they actually really mean it, you know? You know, and I like, you know, Best Chef Texas is just for me, you know, so many better chefs out there, but you know, I just, you know, every dog has his day, and that was mine, you know?
Yeah. And I think it speaks to kind of, you know, where we are, like as a state, like the, what we choose to honor, you know, I think obviously like Mexican cuisine is like the heart of so much of everything that happens in Texas. And so,
right,
you know, somebody who's bringing a really fresh perspective to those flavors, those dishes that we know, like as like a society that we sort of know and appreciate, I think that really resonates with people. And I think that's, you know, you were the right man at the right time.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, I agree. You know, you know, if you if you look at the last two winners, right? Like, so you have Annalise with her taqueria in the Rio Grande, right? And then prior to her, Chef G, right? Street to Kitchen, and doing her like her thing with Thai food and stuff like that. I feel like, you know, the last have all been like different spectrums, right? Like you got someone, you know, from Thailand that's doing her food unapologetically, like literal statement, you know. And then you got like a taqueria like from the Rio Grande, which is arguably probably like some of the best Mexican food in Texas, period, you know, that area. And then you got me that's something that's like a hybrid of things, right? Like you got like these Mexican forward dishes, but it's also like a new American menu. I think they did a good job.
Well, and also, you know, even the sort of the evolution from, you know, El Naranjo in Austin that won
right. The
first Best Chef Texas in 22, to you winning for Belly of the Beast in 25, it's like, you know, I've been to that restaurant and it's delicious, but it's very traditional.
Right.
And you are very not. And so I just think that's just such a fun like evolution of, you know, what we get excited about or what we're looking for in Mexican cuisine. You know, El Naranjo has a lot in conversation with like Hugo Ortega and right. His restaurants. And I mean, I know you worked at Sochi briefly back in the day, but like that wasn't, you know, that's not how I think of your food and his food pretty differently.
Yeah, completely different. Like, and that's like how I mentioned, I don't ever want to be in that box, right? Like it's, you know, when you think of like, for example, just Oaxacan food, like, you know, I mean, like, it's just like at Sochi is like, you know, that's the theme, right? You're a Oaxacan restaurant. You know, you really just got to kind of like think about like everything that happens only in Oaxaca, not even as a Mexico, like not even like interior Mexico, but just one state. It's a difficult box to be in, you know. I bastardize my parents' recipes. I like to eat curries, you know, I make curry, you know what I mean? I just love food so much for me to be able to be like, this is all I'm going to cook. It's like, no, man, I want to be able to cook whatever I want.
So you mentioned Belly of the Beast 3.0 with a live fire grill. I mean, how serious are you about?
Honestly, if I had money, I'd be doing that soon. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? Cause we have plans, right? Like there's obviously evolutions of things, right? Like, you know, and I think, you know, finding the right space, nothing too crazy, nothing too big, nice little patio, you know, full bar and live fire. I think, you know, we'd be able to do quite a few different things, you know? You know, just kind of like, you know, I'm never going to reinvent the wheel. Just kind of want to add air to the tire and keep rolling, you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that would be in your mind, is it a second location, or is it like this location closes and then evolves for a third time into a new location with the fancier equipment and the bigger setup?
It would be an evolution, but I wouldn't get rid of the space I'm in. I would probably just make that into a taqueria.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to ask you about is I got an email this morning. You're doing a pop-up at Maximo with Adrian Torres.
And, I am.
You know, I know that, you know, I kind of rattled off those restaurants that you're in conversation with. And I think, you know, as we kind of look to the future, even I think, like Adrian could be that next guy that kind of joins that club with y'all. So
absolutely.
So say a little bit about him as a chef and kind of what you guys are going to be doing on Mexican Independence Day.
Adrian's a very good friend of mine. I love that guy. You know, he worked with me at the original Belly of the Beast. I met him at Sochi originally, and then when I opened Belly, the original Belly, he was actually the guy that was right next to me cooking all the food. It was him and I on the line. So, he got exposed to a lot of my cooking, a lot of my movements, a lot of how I do things. And, he made a damn good Padawan, And every time I see like his successes or his write-ups and stuff like that, I'm like super proud, man, because I know that he's so young. I think he's like 26, I think, or just turned 26, I think.
26 or seven. I mean, yeah, the whole future's ahead of him.
He's super young, man. Like, and to be that young and have like such a a mature mind and stuff like that. Because when he worked with me, he was only barely turning 22, and you know what I mean? Like, he was still already like very much mature, like knowing that he wanted to like learn this craft and like grow in it, and eventually be like a CDC or an executive chef somewhere. So when I see that, I'm like super proud. So like when I met Seth at his birthday party, and Seth and I were talking, and I told him, hey, maybe we should do a little pop-up, because one of the things I want to do at Belly of the Beast is like a peer mentor to peer situation, dinners kind of situation, like people that have worked with me or under me, that were like cooks that are now like running their own kitchens and stuff like that, like to do dinners with them, because like just to, so they could show me, so they could show me what they learned and stuff like that. I would love to see that progression, and that's something I'm putting out there too, because I want to do that. It's like the mentor to peer program kind of situation. So this to me is like the first version of that, right? To be able to like sit down, and Adrian and I were having a conversation about the menu, and we're going to do this menu where we're touching on regions of the country of Mexico, right? On Mexican Independence Day. We're like, okay, let's do like some Baja, let's do some Northern, some Central, some Southern, some coastal situation and stuff like that. So I think the dinner's gonna be great, not just because I'm participating in it, but I think overall, like, I think the menu that we wrote down is gonna be very good. And then there's gonna be a little after party after, that's, I think, there's gonna be like some paletas and like some Tosti Locos situation, and I think like a mariachi band and stuff like that.
So yeah, it's going to be a fun night.
Yeah, definitely. Party.
And we could say for people that are potentially interested in this, if you go to Maximo's Open Table, you can get your tickets and all that.
Nice.
So you're thinking about the next evolution of Belly of the Beast. I mean, what else is what has life been like, I guess, since the Beard Award? I mean, what else do you kind of have your eyes on?
Just really busy. Like, we've been I've been actively trying to hire people, just more people, so I'm able to. I got a few like collaborations, like out of town stuff going on. So stuff that I committed prior, and then stuff that happened after the award and stuff like that. I'm gonna be like in September, late September, I'll be like in New Orleans cooking at Palm and Pine, and then in October, I'm doing Outstanding in the Field, which is pretty darn cool. They reached out to me before the award, and I've actually always wanted to do this event. So like when they reached out to me, I was like, man, heck yeah. That'll be in Round Top, and then later that month I'll be at Hotel Emma doing a collaboration dinner, sponsored by Dom Perignon. And then November, I think I have another big event, like offsite event, like at a winery that for like a big company. Just so, being approached with that kind of stuff, but also just being busy, just trying to hire more people so the restaurant could be self-sustainable one day, like be able to step away and be able to do things like private dinners. And like, I've been asked to like speak at certain things as honorarium things, and you know, just kind of like tell my story. But ultimately, like, you know, I not only do I want like to do like the 3.0 version, and then also at the same time create a taqueria, like, you know, in that space, because that's been on my mind for a long time too, to like have just a taqueria restaurant. You know, I think, you know, I want to write a cookbook, you know, that's a big one too, that I think, that's always been, you know, on the bucket list. So, yeah.
That's funny. I was just going to ask you, I mean, do you have a sense of what it would be about or how you'd focus it?
It would be, you know, I don't know yet. I wrote an appendix, you know, so like I wrote like a table of contents and, you know, just like little steps of like what I would want to do. But I just kind of want to share like an overall, like, not basically what we do at Belly of the Beast. It would be more like of like Mexican food upbringing and with like the twist, with like the different versions of stuff of how I do things, and actually the thinking behind it and stuff like that. And, you know, I write down a lot of recipes on like seafold papers. And
I was thinking napkins. There's like a stack of napkins.
Yeah. Napkins and POS paper. And, I kind of want to have like pictures of that in the book, and, you know, like just kind of like, even like have, you know, just kind of like funky things that I've always done like throughout my career and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I'm not really surprised to hear that. I think I did the CityCast podcast right after you won, and the host Raheel Ramzanali said something to me about like, does this matter? Like, does winning this award matter? And I was like, oh yeah, it opens all these kind of doors to like go to out of town events and maybe write a cookbook and open a new location in a bigger, nicer space. I mean, you know, I say it all the time, but it's like, you know, in the, like that Godfather Goodfellas sense, it's like, you're made, you know, yeah. You're part of the club now. And you are nationally recognized as a good chef. And it's a tough business, but it makes things just a little easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of six in Houston ever. So, you know, in the last 35 years, and I think, you know, like, does it matter? Yeah, of course. Does it matter if an Olympian wins a gold medal? You know what I mean? Like exactly. You know, it does open doors. I mean, you know, but we take it super slow. Like things I've been approached with. You know what I mean? I want to be able to enjoy what we're doing here, and like I tell everybody else, I'm not trying to like grow these restaurants and just have restaurants just because I can or whatever. I want things to be successful where I'm at right now, because at the end of the day, this all could go away tomorrow, man. So it's like, for me, I stay super low to the ground, and I'm not gonna change that.
Yeah, avoid the Vegas restaurant, right? Like that's not on brand. That brings me to the end of my questions. Is there anything you want to discuss that I haven't asked you about?
No, just, the way I always end anything is I just want to show gratitude to obviously, like you guys, the media, the guests that come in, and my staff, you know, and especially my wife, that she truly, like when I said that in my speech, that about the 90%, she truly is the 90%. She is the reason that I'm able to make this happen. So, you know, just thanks and gratitude for everything about that.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Yes. And I know that you played the lightning round in 2020. So I have five new questions for you.
Okay.
Five new questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Thomas Billy, what is your favorite ingredient?
Pasilla miche, a smoked chili from Oaxaca.
Good answer. All right. What is the last TV show you binge watched?
It's Sakamoto Days. It's an anime.
What is your favorite place to go for a burger?
Oh man, that's a good one. Burger Bodega, baby.
It's a good answer. That's a boss listens to the show. He'll appreciate that. What is your reality show guilty pleasure?
Reality, Top Chef, yeah,
absolutely. And then finally, what is the new Houston restaurant you haven't been to yet, but are dying to try?
Oh, there's three of them. Can I name all three?
Yeah, fire away.
All right, Milton's, because now they open on Sunday, and I'm actually able to go. Basso, definitely. And then maybe one day I'll be able to eat at that demo when he adds an extra day or something.
Basso also open on Sunday, so that's available. Yeah.
No, and they're open Tuesday. So, like, you know, like, I'll be able to go to those. But Milton's is probably the first one I'm going to.
All right. Give us the website and the social media for Belly of the Beast.
BOTBfood.com. And then it's at BOTBfood for Instagram and Facebook.
All right. Thomas Billy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric. Talk to you soon.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.